and welcome to A Book A Day podcast. This is your host Deepak Rana and I'm back with the Bhagavad Gita. Not the original text, but this is a book by Vandana R. Singh. And the book is called The Bhagavad Gita, A Life-Changing Conversation. And I'm here doing the third part of our series. And you'd probably remember in the first two parts, we did Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. That is, finding spirituality through our actions and through devotion. And now we are going to discuss Jnana Yoga or knowledge. And that is something I find really impressive about not just Bhagavad Gita, but also the whole of Indian philosophy. Because a lot of times we use this phrase that ignorance is bliss. But that's not really the case in Indian school of thought, in various philosophical schools. Here we find that knowledge is bliss. And if you're going to stay ignorant, you're going to suffer. So as an intellectual here pursuing Indian thought or Indian philosophical system, you don't have to be miserable. You can be joyful, ecstatic, happy person and still pursue philosophy. And that's really wonderful, isn't it? And that's really the foundation of this part, the third part of the Bhagavad Gita, the Jnana Yoga. That is, we find spiritual liberation through knowledge. And of course, in this case, we are specifically talking about the spiritual knowledge, which Gita discusses in great detail in from chapter 13 to chapter 18. But I think this is a theme that is reflected throughout all the chapters, because essentially, it's a source of knowledge. And no matter what Gita is teaching in the first chapter or second chapter, in the end, all of that is knowledge. So now let's deep dive into it. In the 13th chapter of the Gita, we find the discussion of the matter and spirit, the difference between what is perishable, which is matter, and imperishable, which is the spirit. And it's a discussion that just comes up in almost every theological or spiritual discussion. What is matter? Is it separate from the spirit? If so, how? And what's the connection really like? So now Krishna gets into the details of the constituents of our bodies and mind. And he talks about the physical elements which are essential for the matter part of us. That is earth, water, fire, air, and space. And then he also talks about what goes on inside us, the mind that we have. And of course, the mind functions through five senses. And it's the mind that is most superior among these and takes charge. And therefore, we need to control our minds in order to control our lives. And then in the 14th chapter, we find further details about our own constitution, how our material bodies are organized, how they function. And that's really interesting. So what Krishna tells in the 14th chapter is that each one of us is driven by a specific mode of material energy. So at the fundamental level, even the material itself is comprising of energy. And there are different modes, three categories of modes are described in it, or gunas are, as they are called. So one is sattva, that is goodness, the raja, the passion, or tama, the ignorance. And whichever of these three is predominant in a person, it governs that person's thoughts and actions accordingly. So based on that, we have these different qualities based on these three categories. And obviously, it's not equally divided in all of us. We are tilted towards one or the other. Suppose we have goodness in abundance or sattva, then we'll be free from sinful activities or impure thoughts, and our actions and thoughts will be driven by goodness. And if we have more of rajaguna, then we'll have that passion for worldly desires, for wealth, for careers, for power and positions and status in the society. All these things will be gravitating towards those things. And if we have tamas, then we are a little lazy and often procrastinating and indulging in deceit and corrupt activities. So we have these qualities in us, and we keep thinking or performing our actions based on how these qualities are functioning within us. And it happens all the time that sometimes what happens is goodness prevails over our passions, even though we have our own worldly desires, but then goodness takes over at certain moments. In certain moments, that laziness and ignorance takes over. And sometimes the passions, the desires, the worldly pursuits, they take over and they decide. So it's often a tussle between these three, even inside of us. And I think that's where, metaphorically speaking, the concept of heaven and earth and hell comes in. That's really an interesting metaphor. You may take it literally, you may take it as just as a metaphor, it's up to you. But this idea that when we are just being selfless and doing acts of goodness, then we are really in heaven. We are finding happiness, we are in joy. When we are pursuing the material goals, the worldly desires, then we are sticking to earth. And if we are going towards corrupt means, then we are destined for hell. Does that mean we literally go to a place called hell? Maybe, maybe not. But it's the idea that it's a dark place, psychologically speaking at least. And when we indulge in all those corrupt activities, we stay in hell. And that means a really dark place where we suffer. That much is true. And then we move to chapter 15, which says Purushottam Yoga, or Yoga as the Supreme Self. And it starts with a really interesting verse that I would like to narrate here. It says, "The Supreme Divine Power said, 'It is said that there is an imperishable tree that has its roots growing upwards and branches downwards, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. The one who understands the significance of this tree is said to be truly knowledgeable of the Vedas.'" And just after this, the next verse says, "The branches extend upward and downward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. The roots grow downward, keeping the flow of actions in motion in the world of humans." So, quite heavy and difficult to interpret this part, but it's really, really interesting. I think you'll derive some important lessons here. So let me go to the interpretation or comments that Vandanar Singh has added in this part. She says that this is an eternal, imperishable tree with its roots above and branches below. And it also means that the tree will not be the same even the next day, or something which is constantly changing. And this can also be understood as a symbolic of life and the world around us, as these two are constantly changing and are never the same on any 2 days. Therefore, the world we live in is temporary. And then he goes further and talks about how there are similarities between the human form and this tree that we are talking about here. And tree grows, it changes, it has its growth. And similarly, we have our growth based on the qualities that we have. That is the sattva, the goodness, rajas, the passion, and tamas, the ignorance. And they determine our growth. But having said that, they are determining the growth of the material world. And if we have to find liberation, we have to go even beyond them. And that's what it says in the next few verses. Let me narrate the next couple of them. They say, the real form of this tree is not perceived in this world, neither its beginning nor its end, nor its continued existence. But with determination, one must cut down this deep-rooted tree with a strong axe of detachment. Then one must search out the base of the tree, which is the Supreme Lord, from whom the activity of the universe came into being a long time ago. And upon taking refuge in him, one will not return to this world again. So that's really an interesting point here. He's talking about salvation. He says that it's not easy that when we are in human form to understand this concept of divine being, because that lies beyond us. Because if you look at the tree, what you see is the branches and the leaves, but you don't see the roots. But unless we really water the roots, the tree won't really fully blossom. So in order to achieve our full potential, we have to go deeper into our own existence, our own essence, where we come from. And once we acquire that knowledge, then we truly blossom. And at the same time, he's also asking us to keep a check on our attachments. And then we can, once we move on from worldly attachments, worldly desires, then we can better understand the spiritual world. And then in the next chapter, Krishna very carefully and in a crisp and clear manner, he explains the qualities of the divine and the qualities of the demoniacs. And these are captured in the first three verses, where Krishna says, fearlessness, purity of mind, unwavering pursuit of spiritual knowledge, charity, control of the senses, performance of sacrifice, study of the sacred books, austerity and simplicity, then non-violence, truthfulness, absence of anger, renunciation, being peaceful, restraint from undue criticism, compassion towards all living beings, absence of greed, being gentle, being modest, and determination, then vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, bearing enmity towards no one, and absence of vanity. O scion of Bharata, these are the transcendental virtues of those endowed with the divine nature. And then further he talks about the demoniac nature and those qualities. The qualities are hypocrisy, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. So we know the difference, and I think even instinctively we have that sense in human beings, that instinctive sense of differentiating between the good and the evil, and these good qualities and bad qualities, and we know them instinctively. And Krishna is saying that if we are going to follow the path of spiritual liberation, we need to have that divine nature in us, in our actions. It should get reflected in what we think, what we do, in all our lives. So that's what he is recommending us to do. And then in chapter 18, it kind of summarizes these paths of Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Jnana Yoga. And the focus or the emphasis is on selfless action, that is Karma Yoga, and devotion to Supreme Being, that is Bhakti Yoga. But to perform these two things, we need right knowledge, that is Jnana Yoga, and that is there in the Bhagavad Gita. So that's what you find in the Bhagavad Gita, and that's the path it recommends to find spiritual liberation. Just to go through the whole process again, it recommends three key yoga, that is Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Jnana Yoga. In Jnana Yoga, we find this clear difference between eternal soul, that is Atman, and the temporary material world. Then Jnana Yoga, it encourages us to transcend the attachments, the material attachments, the worldly desires, especially to their outcomes and immediate results. And it encourages us to perform our actions selflessly. And most importantly, it's an advocacy for knowledge as a means to realize the true self and find spiritual liberation or moksha, nirvana, whatever you want to call it. So knowledge is really important, and it's your greatest friend on this spiritual journey, whereas ignorance can be your greatest enemy. So that's it from my side. And I would highly recommend you to pick this book, The Bhagavad Gita by Vandana R. Singh. And I would also recommend you to check out her podcast, Gita Talks by Vandana R. Singh, where you find in every episode she's talking about a particular Gita idea and its practical significance. So please check out the podcast as well. And I hope you had a good time, you enjoyed this series where we talked about the Bhagavad Gita and various aspects of it. And needless to say, in this much time, we could barely touch the surface, because each verse, it's talking about so many other things in detail, which you have to learn in Indian philosophy. And you can really talk at length describing each verse of the Bhagavad Gita. But what we have tried to do here is talking about the practical and really valuable lessons from spirituality's point of view, which are going to be helpful in today's world. And although these, the values or the fundamental teachings, they remain timeless, this modern interpretation by Vandanar Singh is very specific to our times, and I think you'll find it much more relatable. So I hope you'll check that out, and do write to me how you found it, and let me know your thoughts, and I'll be happy to hear them. Thank you very much. I'll join you once again in the next episode, where we talk about more books and ideas. Thank you. Cheers.